Captain's Log, Stardate 3141.9. After a freak accident thrust our Hilton Star Trek Experience Simulator into a temporal wake, we have found ourselves deposited in the TOS era of Star Trek. Our systems are damaged, and our onboard Chad computer tells me that it will take several months to fully restore the systems so that we may travel back to our own time, our own next generation. Though we can leave the simulator at any time, and we are not technically trapped back in time, we find ourselves annoyed with the customers in the store, who repeatedly ask if movies like Madame Web or Wonka have hit the shelves yet. We keep telling them that these movies only exist in a parallel universe to ours, but no one listens. For these reasons, Mike, Jackie, and myself choose to stay in the simulator in the hopes that the adventures of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy will cure the doldrums of our miserable nightmare lives.
Captain's Log, Stardate 3142.3. Slightly over two centuries ago, a group of scientists planned for a race of supermen and created conquistadors.
Name? Khan Noonien Singh.
From 1992 through 1996, absolute ruler of more than a quarter of your world.
Well, either choke me or cut my throat.
You fled. Why? Were you afraid?
I've never been afraid.
But you left at the very time mankind needed courage.
We offered the world order.
I intend to take this ship.
Will you assist me?
Oh, please, Khan, don't ask me.
Leave me then. The battle begins again. Only this time is not the world will win. It's the universe. Happy, you're no match for me.
It does not matter. The captain is dead.
Hello, and welcome to this classic version of the Apocalypse Video Trekcast. We are now in the original series timeline. I'm your host and captain, David Snyder. I'm joined again by First Officer Jackie.
Well, either choke me or cut my throat. Make up your mind. Do you like my DeForest Kelly?
I do. It's nice.
Thank you.
What kind of cut would I have to make? I'm thinking maybe carotid artery.
Right underneath the left ear.
Ah, thank you. I'm also joined by Lieutenant Michael.
He was always my favorite of the dictators.
That is one of the big talking points I have in my notes.
Oh, like everyone's, yeah.
Everyone's curiosity and admiration to some degree of dictators of the past. It's like, oh, it's just a human trait. We love dictators.
I will get to it.
You wouldn't
it,
understand,
but...
Spock. We can.
Spock's the only one out there real enough to be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
They literally start laughing at a certain point when he's like, but they were dictators. They're like, ha, ha, ha.
He's like, gentlemen?
As they're talking, you know, as they're talking and drinking coffee out of their Dixie cups.
Name? Khan Noonien Singh.
From 1992 through 1996, absolute ruler of more than a quarter of your world. From Asia through the Middle East.
The last of the tyrants to be overthrown.
I must confess, gentlemen, I've always held a sneaking admiration for this one.
He was the best of the tyrants, and the most dangerous. They were supermen in a sense. Stronger, braver, certainly more ambitious, more daring.
Gentlemen, this romanticism about a ruthless dictator is...
But Spock, we humans have a streak of barbarism in us. Appalling, but there, nevertheless.
There were no massacres under his rule.
And as little freedom. No wars until he was attacked. Gentlemen.
Mr. Spock, you misunderstand us. We can be against him and admire him all at the same time.
Illogical.
Totally.
I mean, I think that, again, we will get into it, but I think the big takeaway from this episode in general is that human beings are horny for history in the worst
horny
ways.
Horny for history, yeah.
Well, we'll get to that. But so we're in TOS times, guys. We're in there. Our Hilton Star Trek simulator, if you recall, previously on the TrekCast, our Hilton Star Trek simulator malfunctioned. It shot us back in time to the era of the original series.
Yeah, we all know this.
It's been a while since the last TrekCast. Mm. And here we are in TOS times. And I mean, I guess since this is our first TOS episode, like, let's kind of just talk our background with TOS. Like, Jackie, I know you are a huge TOS fan.
I have been a TOS fan when I first kind of, well, I grew up on TNG, just kind of in the background, because it was the 90s. But, TOS was like what I got into when I had like my teenage Star Trek awakening. Well, that J.J. Abrams movie is a polarizing moment in my life, but it did put me towards the original series. I think I've talked about this before, but I love camp. I love how this was simultaneously like the most expensive thing on TV and just like the cheapest fucking garage production that like could exist.
Shot several times during this episode.
It's beautiful.
It looks great still.
Every single actor is wearing a pound of eyeshadow. It's incredible.
Every time they bumped up against a prop or like something that was supposed to be solid, it wiggled.
Oh yeah, of course.
Oh, there's that great shot in this episode of Khan trying to forcibly open the sliding door.
This very, very heavy door. Definitely
a little piece of cardboard.
Made of cardboard.
He had to summon his strength first. Like,
no, Star Trek is.
It's very stage play.
Very stage play, yeah. but that's what's like you know, a quality throughout many decades of Star Trek, but starts at TOS, is that like you know, various pieces of technology being presented that then, you know, willed themselves into existence, basically, when it comes to like, you know, a cell phone, a video call, or even just an automatic like sliding doors like that. Every time a door automatically opens on a Star Trek show, up until like TNG, like that's a person behind the door moving it open. Yeah. There are a lot of bloopers throughout, again, many decades of Star Trek, of actors walking into the doors because the person behind like didn't hear the cue or whatever.
I'm a big fan of the TOS era. This is the era when it was okay to rest your coffee mug on the control panel for the starship. Just right on the control panel.
Yep. Don't need a lid. Don't need fucking nothing.
And this is the era of there's no touch screens anywhere. There are buttons. There are knobs.
A lot of
and they're
and
all
knobs.
Made of wood.
One of the things I love about wood the original yarn. Series Star Trek is, this can apply to a lot of sci-fi of the era in general, but like I love when you're in a futuristic setting with computers and knobs and buttons and whatnot, that none of them are labeled.
No, no.
Seemingly, they're just labeless things. Who knows what they do?
They're just kind of blinking and...
Yeah. It wasn't until they got, I think, into the movies and maybe TNG where they're like, you know, it would make sense if these were labeled.
This would
in some
all
way.
Have some labels, I'm pretty sure.
Some sort of identification so people know what type of button they're pressing.
No, it's fine. Just kind of move your hands vaguely over the devices and say, Captain, I'm getting a blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's like. It's kind of a time when it's like, I don't think a lot of thought was put into that type of thing where it's like, eh, just make it look futuristic. Like,
oh,
like,
sure. I mean,
like the things about this, the bridge of the Enterprise in this show is, it's so funny to me. It's always made me kind of chuckle. It's like, you'll see these screens on the upper portion of the bridge that are just, it looked like, just like they're showing still photos of like a galaxy or something. It's like there doesn't appear to be any real practical purpose to a lot
of
the things
on the ship.
Look, we had
to build these sets in 5 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Like, for instance, like it always makes me laugh when like Uhura or maybe Spock is like looking at their screen and like they're somehow getting this information, but all we see are flashing lights.
Yeah, or like a black and white like swirly thing. Like, what is that behind Spock?
But somehow just... they're getting information from it, and it makes me wonder, like, is this some sort of like Matrix type thing where it's like, oh, I see the code, I can make everything out.
Who can say? It's they really were just going by the seat of their pants.
Well, you have to imagine, like, too, this would have been seen on probably like a 13-inch.
Oh, that's right.
Like fuzzy,
black and white.
You know, it's coming over like the airwaves, so maybe it's like a little staticky, and you're sitting like 10 feet away from it. With your, like, fifth martini of the day.
Or you're a child sitting 5 inches away from it. Regardless, you are not seeing that any kind of detail.
If there were labels on there, you wouldn't be seeing them anyway.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't improve anything. If anything, it would...
It was never meant to be seen the way we're seeing it.
No, no.
In high definition, yeah.
And, like, a 55-inch screen.
It's, but once again, we were meant to see... that beautiful eye makeup on all of the beautiful men on this show.
I kind of love the aesthetic of the show.
Oh,
like, I
love,
I think it holds
it
up
so much. It's oh man, I meant to show this to you, Dave, before we sat down to this, but I watched this this little video essay recently on the history of the Scant in Star Trek.
The Scant?
That one is, you remember it from early, from season one of The Next Generation. It's the skirt pant, the kind of gender neutral uniform. That we see on a couple men in the background, but it's like, you know, a dress, like a dress of sorts with the boots. And that costume design came from the costume designer who worked on TOS, who worked from like the pilot through the series, and then worked on other kind of sci-fi works in the 60s before doing some work on The Next Generation when it came back. But his first kind of, and I'm sorry, this is a huge like tangent, but his original design in that pilot where men and women are just wearing like, you know, the top and pants. And one of the notes was when it got picked up for a series was like, we need some more interesting like costumes. And that's where the miniskirt comes in, which is its own kind of like can of worms from a whole bunch of angles. But I think
these miniskirts and this episode in particular are mini.
The skirts are skirting, but
you could basically see like butt cheek.
Well, because it comes with like the briefs underneath, because it's like that's but that said, the miniskirt is like a political thing and a you know, it opens up this kind of thing about sexuality and bodies and etc. But it wasn't necessarily a like purely male gaze, like let's look at the legs thing. Of course it's partly that, but again, going back to this costume designer, the other kind of sci-fi, you know, TV movies or et cetera that he worked on a lot in this same era involve a lot of like, you know, futuristic, but we're wearing like, you know, men and women are wearing like togas kind of thing. And you see that kind of pop up in costumes in Star Trek and otherwise. Anyway, to bring the tangent together, there's a lot more kind of like gender fuckery, like men in skirts, you know, being like a cool thing at play here with the famous TOS miniskirt. And I love the Scant, and I'm sorry that it never really got to have its moment the way it should have.
The Dr. Pulowski of costumes.
You know, we could have had it all. And it's okay that it didn't work out the way it did, but that said, Star Trek, miniskirts, men in skirts, it's all good in my books.
Well, while we're on this tangent, what do you all think of Khan's, well, basically Khan's wardrobe?
Oh my God,
hot
as fuck.
Have we said what episode we're...
Oh yeah, did we even mention...
Well, we kind of got in, I kind of jumped into
our history.
I'm
sorry, I just went straight into Scant territory.
Well, before we get into that, let's conclude our prologue here to TOS. Mike, how did you kind of discover?
Oh yeah,
TOS?
Sorry.
Late in life, I did see a few years ago the whole thing of TOS, which is only three seasons. It's not that much.
Well, to be fair, each season holds like 25 episodes.
That's back when you get a full season.
Sure, but you could say the same thing about Next Generation, right? Like, yeah, it's like 20 episodes a season, but there's like 7 seasons of Next Generation.
True.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's 3 seasons of 20 episodes each. And I love it. I mean, like, I think a cool thing about it is it's like, I think a lot of it works because it's shot on film. Like, it's easy to... It holds up, like, visually, for sure, I think. Even cheesy as it is. But it feels like stage play. And the performances on this, like Next Generation, they just have great chemistry. Like, these characters and the actors are, for, like, the core, you know, Bones, Spock, and Kirk. But also some of, like, you know, the other people, too, are really good. Like, Scotty O'Hara are, like, super good. And, yeah, it's, like, all that chemistry works. And then there's, like... Some of the sci-fi stuff is, it's like, it's either like high camp, ridiculous fun where it's like they go on the planet and it's like they meet the god Apollo.
Uh-huh. Or not science fiction at all. It's just like, I don't know, this adventure's happening.
Or there's some episodes where there's like interesting sci-fi dilemmas, you know? And I like that it's like solved a bit differently. Like he is not... Picard, like Kirk is more swagger.
He's a cowboy.
And yeah, more of a
cowboy diplomacy.
And like he's been parodied so much, and you definitely can parody a lot of them, but like when you see the real deal, there's like he's cool. He's pretty cool. I'm pro Kirk.
It's something to behold because like at times, well, just to sort of wrap everything up, I came to TOS from the movies. I never saw the show. I saw the movies first, and the movies were kind of my gateway back to the show.
Yeah.
And watching this episode, it had been a while since I've seen this or really any TOS episode, and what struck me was just the dynamic between the core threes, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, and just their
the big three.
And just like the episode begins, and what I was kind of about to get to a moment ago where it's like I simultaneously love Kirk Swagger, but I also hate a lot of other things about him. Like, for instance, when the episode begins, so Space Seed, season 1, episode 22, the introduction of Khan Noonien Singh.
It
begins.
The iconic Khan Noonien Singh.
They have this signal. There's a ship out there. It appears to be derelict. We're closing in on it. And they get this signal, and Uhura says, "It's Morse code, Captain." And Kirk's immediate response is, "Yes, thank you, Uhura. Like I didn't know that." Like, he's very dismissive of Uhura, where it's like, and even Spock, too, where Spock's just like, "Why do you
unnecessary,
love
Captain.
Me wrong?" And Kirk's just like, "Oh, I'm sorry, Spock. It's must be an emotional Earth weakness," which, aka, being a dick. You know what I mean? Like, I love his swagger, but he is a dick throughout a lot of this
episode.
Oh yeah,
that's why Kirk works the best when like he either is like sacrificing himself for like his friends or his ship and showing, you know, real bravery and etc. Which he does, or he's just getting smacked around and like beat the shit out of, which he also does in this episode. Again, that's why I was also pulled in so heavily to the J.J. Abrams, that first movie, because Kirk gets his ass beat a lot in that one, and you're like, all right, what's up?
But it speaks to something. Just, they mention magnetism in this episode in regards to Khan. I think that also applies to Kirk.
Oh,
he just
definitely
has that energy.
It's and especially in the time and place of like,
he's a beautiful man.
He's so fucking good looking.
Dude, him in that yellow outfit and pants.
It's there's so many hotties in this episode. But especially, yeah, like Khan. In the time and place of the late 60s, like this kind of like masculinity is like you both love and hate it because it is charming against your will, even though there is that kind of taste of like, I don't want to. Fuck you, you handsome barrel chested, you know. Fuck you.
Are you certain of your sensor readings?
Definitely a space vessel of some type.
Origin?
Unknown. Could hardly be an Earth ship. There have been no flights into this sector for years.
I'm picking up a signal, sir. Captain, that's the old Morse code call signal.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
CQ? CQ?
We're reading it, Lieutenant.
There were times when I felt like Lieutenant MacGyver's. You know what I mean?
but at the same time, it's like you kind of get that twinkle in his eye, a little smile, and you're like, okay, all right, I can't stay mad at you.
What do you mean, a fair psychologist? Try the best.
Or yeah, whenever you get like a good moment of Bones and Kirk banter, where you're like, oh, my buddies, these are my buddies.
Talking dictators.
Fucking
dictator. I love it's just Kirk in that moment after they well, I guess let's get to it.
Yeah.
So they find
these sleeping superhumans and they're wrapped up in gold fishnets and blah blah blah.
Yeah, basically like they stumble upon the ship and the ship it's like a ship filled with cryogenically frozen people.
Yeah.
And they unfreeze one of them.
Well, one of them starts to unfreeze. And as historian Marla McGivers points out, this is how you can tell he's the leader, so we can look ahead to see if things are safe. We also have a historian aboard this ship.
And it gets back Earth to historian. He's like, hey, what's that historian's name? McGivers?
MacGyver.
Yeah, he like doesn't know the name.
Yeah.
Picard wouldn't know the name.
Picard also would be like, I don't know, what's your face?
He would probably just say, assign the ship historian to the crew.
Yeah.
And say like, what's your face? He's like snapping his fingers. Help me out here, Spock.
There's so much, again, about this show that I love. And then there's, yeah, just the straight up sexism. And you're like, huh, well.
Oh, I'll need somebody familiar with the late 20th century Earth. Here's a chance for that historian to do something for a change. What's her name? McGivers?
Lieutenant MacGyvers.
It is on full display here.
Especially, yeah. I mean, as we'll get into also, but Marla, when she sees Khan, the leader, who is very, very beautiful. She's like immediately like drooling and they're like, Lieutenant, excuse me. And she even is like talked to by Kirk afterwards of like, I know that my behavior on the ship was unacceptable. And it's like, yeah, you were like crazy horny out of nowhere for this sleeping
okay, so,
man.
Well, real quick, just to like really quickly summarize, like they find the ship that's filled with the frozen bodies. And it turns out that these are people who were frozen from the 1990s eugenics wars.
Oh, and this is the first time we hear about those famous eugenics wars.
And yeah, Khan is basically like one of the big leaders of the eugenics wars. They say he like...
He was the absolute ruler of what, like a quarter of
the
Earth?
They describe like the Mongol Empire, basically. Yeah. Like, yeah, at the height of its power, like Asia and I think Europe or something.
So
he's been frozen back or revived back, and now he's going to try and take over the world again.
Or something.
No.
At least steal
when
a ship.
When he revives his crew later in the episode, he goes, no longer a planet.
Yeah.
The universe.
Yeah.
He has like it's played with like this because so there's that historian MacGyver who like falls in love immediately with Khan
because people are horny for history.
Well, they establish she has a thing for great dictators.
She like literally is horny for dictators too.
Her apartment is like filled with paintings she's done of like Napoleon Bonaparte, not Hitler. They're making this in the 60s.
I think
you can't do that.
That's the thing is we are barely removed from World War II at this point in time, and many of the people who worked on Star Trek, including Nimoy and Shatner, were Jewish, and so bringing up this like this lore of like World War III and eugenics wars, it's like this is something that is definitely fresh in the cultural.
They describe the eugenics wars too as basically like scientists started. I mean, using eugenics to make like a race of superhumans,
and we're
Khan
also...
is one of them. And they're like the idea is they're like super the Nazi like Ubermensch thing. Like they are like
not only
bigger, stronger, smarter,
physically
faster.
It's also kind of tied up in being made in the '60s, like Cold War shit, because there's also this kind of fear of, like, you know, Eastern slash, like, potentially, like, communist slash dictator slash whatever. Like, there's that wrapped up in it, too. But again, it's like World War II was 20 years ago, like, barely, from the time that they're making this. So there's a lot going on. And on top of that, too, the... You know, in the way that Star Trek always did, it's like they're making a statement on race, too, by having a man of color be this face of, like, the genetic superhuman, which I believe racists at the time were not into.
Which makes it all the weirder. Like, I'm wondering, if is this something that the writers of this episode are bringing to it, that the whole, most of the crew, it seems, or at least the bridge crew, is like, yeah, I mean, you know, we don't condone what these dictators of the past did, but they're pretty interesting, right?
you get some of the conversation. It's interesting, like, they're, when they have that conversation about the dictators, it reminds me a little bit of, like alt-right people talking about, like, yes. Well, you know, like, Hitler did actually do some good things for Germany. Like, it has that vibe to it.
Yes, but it's also, like, it's... I like that Spock is there to be like, what
yeah.
are you
yeah,
talking
about? Yeah, they're all talking
about
this, and then Spock is just like, gentlemen.
Well, he has that reaction where he's like, Captain, like, yeah. what are you talking about?
It is, it's one of the more animated Spock moments
it
in
is.
The show.
It is, an emotional moment.
One would say.
It's like, I can't believe what I'm hearing right now, Captain.
Yeah.
But like, but I think...
He's basically like, Jesus Christ, Kirk.
Yes. Well,
I was joking earlier, but also not, that, like, I think it's an unfortunately human quality to romanticize and be kind of horny about, like,
a strong man.
Well, things that we feel are, one, a strong man, and two, that we feel are distant enough to be considered history that we can be, like, horny about it.
I've heard that in terms of talking about Genghis Khan, actually.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
The way people talk about him is not the same way people talk about Hitler, but, like, Genghis Khan...
It's so far removed.
Like, just as bad in a lot of ways.
And and again, yeah, it didn't happen in living memory, that it's something to, you know, like, think more abstractly about, that you can then romanticize some things.
I love Kirk's... armchair psychology moment where he's talking to MacGyver's after they come back from the ship, and after she gave her terrible performance on the Botany Bay, where
they're,
he's like,
too horny.
If I were to rate your performance as a member of the landing party today,
I'm sorry,
Lieutenant, at any one time the safety of this entire vessel might depend on the performance of a single crewman aboard, and the fact that you find a man strangely compelling to you personally.
Not personally, Captain, professionally. My profession is historian, and want to find a specimen from the past alive. I mean, the sheer delight of examining his mind.
And men were more adventuresome then, bolder, more colorful.
Yes, sir, I think they were.
Good. If I can have honesty, it's easier to overlook mistakes, that's all.
Yes, sir.
Men of that time were more bold, adventurous, colorful. Basically, I don't want you having relations with that man. Do you hear me, Lieutenant?
So I have a question about...
I know what you're up to.
I have a question about the MacGyver thing.
Yeah.
Being, so they say he's got, like, a magnetism. And to me, the way that she's playing it, like, the actor, and the way it's, like, written, it reminds me of, like... old-timey, not old-timey, but, you know, like, time of the era, like, vampire things, where it's like, do you think that there's,
very...
like, meant to be, like, a thing where it's, like, part of his uber-mensch
he has,
eugenics,
like, a glamour.
Yeah, he's got some, like, kind of the magnetism.
That's,
like, maybe that's meant to be a thing.
That's an interesting take, because it, now that you say it, it's like, oh, this is a very kind of, like, classic Bela Lugosi,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
I'm compelling you. Maybe.
Close-ups on him.
Yeah, but there's also, I mean, there's that, and then there is just the practical matter of that, like, you're in a space with a... you know, very good looking, very physically fit person.
The shoulders on Khan are bigger than, like, all of bones.
But it's like
his entire body.
But one, in like, you know, this is sexy, but two, that like he can and will physically overpower you if you say no, so you might as well say yes.
He will pick you up with one arm and throw you across the room.
Which is legitimately scary. But on the subject of how big and beautiful Ricardo Montalban is, this quote from the Chanopedia of one, everyone just loved working with him. He was apparently a real charmer in person, too.
You don't say.
But that the Montalban's, quote, Montalban's athletic physique was such that when his measurements were passed on to the costuming department, staff thought there had been a mistake. Imagine being that fucking good looking.
There's a shot in this where he's like, it's when he's been taken out of Botany Bay and is not fully come to life. And
he
he's
is
lying.
Literally wrapped up in like gold fishnet stockings.
Well,
like,
there's a shot where he's lying on the lying in bed in the hospital, and Bones is like leaning over him, like helping him out, and you can see Ricardo Montalban's like bare shoulders. And Bones is like leaning over, and those shoulders are like, they're like tree trunks.
It's,
and like Bones is
and,
like
and
wearing
DeForest
like a lanky,
Kelly,
like
his, yeah, is this lanky little
his
cigarette
like
of a man.
Yeah, he's like, it, there is like a stark difference between
when,
the two.
Yeah, when he grabs, when Khan grabs Bones' throat and holds a scalpel to it, it's like, he could kill this man like right now, not even using the scalpel.
This moment is one of my favorite scenes in the entire episode when Khan awakens in
Khan
sick
versus
bay.
Bones.
Khan versus Bones, and he has like his hand around Bones' neck, and he's stolen from what appears to be a little shrine of medical.
I know, yeah. They wouldn't store the medical.
He stole the medical grade butter knife.
Yeah, the dullest thing.
McCoy's
that,
neck, and it's just this moment
that is
where
a great.
McCoy,
yeah.
It's just like, well, are you going to choke me or
I know,
cut me?
Bones,
like, make up your mind.
Bones is just like, yeah, fucking.
He's going so far as to be like, well, you'll want to hit the left carotid artery.
The
just
balls
under my ear.
On this man. Ugh.
Well, either choke me or cut my throat. Make up your mind. English. I thought I dreamed hearing it. Where am I?
You're it.
You're in bed, holding a knife at your doctor's throat. Answer my question. It would be most effective if you would cut the carotid artery just under the left ear. Like a brave man. I was simply trying to avoid an argument.
It's such a cool
and
moment.
Khan respects and I, it.
Yeah, and I think that's a great character moment for Khan, where he's like, ah, I like brave men. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
and he gives him the knife, like Khan or McCoy just kind of takes it. He's like, ah, you're brave. Okay.
There's good. That whole like exchange is really well written too. Like the when he wakes up and he's like, where am I? And he
you're
and Bones
in bed,
is like
holding a knife to your doctor's throat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love Bones.
One of the things I love most, Khan does this a few times in the episode when people come to talk to him. They don't get much out of him. All he says to Kirk is, my name is Khan.
Khan, nothing more?
Just Khan. You know, because he knows, like, all right, they're from the future. Maybe they have records. I don't want to give my whole backstory here, lest they figure out who I am. But it's so great because so many of these situations,
he's
like,
I'm the man of mystery.
I'm going to start employing this in my life where it's like, excuse me, I'm growing fatigue.
Oh yeah, that's the
yeah,
only
you
thing
can pull
you
that
need.
Off, Dave.
The only thing you need.
Khan is my name.
Khan, nothing else.
Khan.
What was the exact date of your liftoff? We know it was sometime in the early 1990s, but
I find myself growing fatigued, Doctor. May we continue this questioning at some other time?
The facts I need, Mr. Khan, will take very little time. For example, the nature of your expedition...
Jim, a little later might be better.
Captain, I wonder if I could have something to read during my convalescence. I was once an engineer of sorts. I would be most interested in studying the technical manuals on your vessel.
Yes, I understand. You have 200 years of catching up to do.
Precisely.
He does this multiple times, and every time everyone's like, oh, well, okay, all right. See
well, he is fatigued, so I guess we should back off.
Before you go, Captain, will you mind if I read your technical schematics, weapon schematics, basically everything that I need to know?
God, it's such a funny...
Captain, if I may read your social security card.
They just seriously give it to him.
And I love... I understand from a portion of the of Kirk's reasoning, where he's like, well, he's going to live in our time now. You might as well.
Yeah, he's like, he's a smart man from like 200 years ago. He wants to learn about what is happening, how this all works.
There's also like Khan's, what's the word? Like Khan's scheming is butting against this kind of optimism inherent to TOS of like, well, this is the future where we've solved hunger and etc. And why would anyone be trying to
the mindset?
You know,
is different.
So I know money doesn't exist in TNG. Do they ever like say whether or not money exists in TOS?
I think they're I think it's the episode where Abe Lincoln comes alive onto the
TOS.
Enterprise, and he sees like black people and white people working together. It's like, oh my goodness, what's going on? And then they explain like, well, we solved racism, of course. We no longer... So I think it was wrapped up in that, where they also mentioned like, and there's no hunger, there's no, wars, no money. It's great. That's why we live in Star Trek Utopia.
And that's the bit that Kirk should have told. Instead of giving him technical schematics, he maybe should have given him a history book.
Well, but that's the thing about a dictator, is they don't care about history. They care about the history they want to tell you.
Yep. So. And your technical and weapon schematics.
And
please.
Your technical weapon schematics.
No reason, Captain.
But yeah, go ahead, take
no
a look.
For no reason.
For no reason. We already kind of touched on Khan hot, but that low cut yellow
There's
number
so many DVs.
At the dinner.
Well, this is and to speak to Khan's appearance, like this is kind of like, if you're going into this episode having only seen Star Trek II, this is a very different looking Khan.
Oh yeah. Like,
he's got jet black hair. He's got it in several scenes. He has it tied back in a ponytail.
Very
he's
neat.
Like 15 years younger too.
Well, yeah, more than that.
Yeah. He was still jacked in Star Trek II, but this one really accentuates, like you said, his shoulders and his chest.
And you get more, even just the way some of this is shot is very like there's some shots in here that are almost like, I don't know, like soap opera ish a bit, with like some of the headshots of the,
like the corners of the frame are kind of blurred.
Yeah.
Like
the the Vaseline smear on some of the close ups with like the backlit over like, looking at each other like, oh yeah. It's a different vibe. I feel like he's more, I think he's a little bit more interesting in this than in the movie.
Well, in the movie, it's like it there's a much clearer, motivation, which is the revenge and everything. Because at the end of this episode, Khan and Marla and their whole gang are put onto the, desolate planet to make their own Seta Alpha, whatever.
Seta Alpha 5.
Five, that's right. And when we pick back up with them in Wrath of Khan, turns out that place sucks, and it was really hard to live, and a lot of people died.
Well, that was kind of the point. But that's just one of the things that I think is like interesting about this episode, and like an angle with Khan that I think they explore here that I don't recall them really getting into in the movie, is sort of like, well, okay, so 200 years ago we created this race of superhumans, like, one of them's back. Like, what do we do with him? Like, do we just kill him? Like, they could have done that. They could have left him on the planet and then just like blown it up.
They mention at the end, after they have defeated Khan, that it's like, what do we do? Put him in a reorientation center?
Ooh,
what is that?
Excuse me? No, it's a good. It's fine. We do good re-education. Don't worry.
That That raised some questions in my mind.
Yeah. I want to know more about these reorient. Who goes there? Who do they send to the reorientation
center? Oh, exactly. Yeah. Who do you deem...
Undesirables, Dave.
Who do you deem necessary of being reeducated?
The undesirables.
I got to imagine 80 years later, Lieutenant Barclay is probably thanking Space God that reorientation centers no longer exist.
They abolished those, and he said, oh, good for me.
He was actually... He was sentenced to a reorientation center, but in that... Before he was able to go there, that's when they finally shut him down.
Yeah.
And then he was...
Great. Now we're stuck with Broccoli. Well, perfect.
Now we can't punish him.
For holodeck crimes against humanity.
Please, can we make an exception?
Yeah, there was a debate in the legislature of the Federation.
It went
about
on for weeks.
The Barclay rule to reopen the...
Well,
I love that we're still dunking on Barclay.
Yeah, I'll never stop dunking on that TOS freak.
Episode. Well, to get back to Khan, arguably this is the more interesting performance of Khan's to watch because he's kind of spinning more plates. Like you said in Star Trek 2, it's all revenge. That's all.
And
he's
clearly
for.
A bad guy, and
for sure.
And he's not that he's not in this, but there's a little bit more like. A little bit more like gray, I think, with some of it.
Sure. Where Khan in Wrath of Khan has been stewing on this, you know, hatred and revenge for however long, and it has, simplified the character.
I think there's an angle here where it's a little bit of like, well, I was created for this. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. What am I supposed to do with my ambition that I was given with?
It's. Like the dinner, well, the dinner scene that is just basically what appears to be a fruit spread.
Oh, it looked like that. Something about TOS that I think is like maybe they never got right is the food.
Oh, yeah. It's like, always the most jacked looking.
And something TNG, I think, ended up getting really well. Like some of the food stuff is like really iconic, like especially the cocktails and stuff on the bar. But this one, I think it's literally like there's like a plate of like. I'm pretty sure it's just like a few things of asparagus with like olives on the end to kind of make it look like it's a weird food. And it looks like what they have is like little dishes, like bowls on each, you know, seat.
Basically whatever they could find from the commissary, like the
with Starburst. I don't know if that's what it was, but that's what it looks like, because they just like filled some bowls with Starburst.
There's also during that the dinner scene that really good kind of. Character moment between Khan, Kirk, and Spock, because Spock is questioning Khan on some things, and Khan's getting like a little heated, and Khan has that line to Kirk of, "You're an excellent tactician. You let your second in command attack while you sit and watch
and watch for weakness.
Kirk has the little, you know, back and forth back. He's like, "Oh, this is a social occasion. Like, I don't know what you're talking about." And it kind of zeroes in on
a coy smile, though.
Yeah, exactly, on how like, you know, Kirk is a tactician. Like he's the cowboy. He's kind of, you know, big and blustery and all those things, but he is also paying attention.
He knows the value of a good team and like the roles that each people are playing on the team, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he cares about the ship.
Forgive my curiosity, Mr. Khan, but my officers are anxious to know more about your extraordinary journey.
And how you managed to keep it out of the history books.
Adventure, Captain, adventure. There was little else left on Earth.
There was the war to end tyranny. Many considered that a noble effort.
Tyranny, sir? Or an attempt to unify humanity?
Unify, sir? Like a team of animals under one whip?
I know something of those years, remember? It was a time of great dreams, of great aspiration.
Under dozens of petty dictatorships.
One man would have ruled eventually. As Rome under Caesar, think of its accomplishments.
Then your sympathies were with...
You are an excellent tactician, Captain. You let your second in command attack. While you sit and watch for weakness.
You have a tendency to express ideas in military terms, Mr. Khan.
It's a great little moment between Khan and Kirk when Khan realizes, oh, you are almost an equal to me.
Yeah. I mean, and not I gotta quite. Say, like, this stuff is, like, this is kind of, like, why I think TOS is cool, is, like, these scenes, like, they're well-written, the actors are great, and there's, like, even with Khan, who's, like, a guest star, it's, like, great chemistry.
Oh,
like,
definitely, yeah.
These are, like, yeah. These scenes hold up. They're fun to watch, and they're, like, they're in, you're, like, edge of your seat in a way, like, for... You know, I mean, it's a dinner conversation, but you know.
You're just waiting for someone to throw a slow-mo punch at Kirk.
Well, and to speak, like, yeah, like, I honestly, I haven't seen all of TOS. There's still a lot of season three I need to watch, but from the 2.5 seasons I've seen, I would say this is probably the most tightly paced episode, arguably, or at least one of.
It's up there, yeah. Like,
you know, because I feel like, at least with me, a lot of TOS episodes, there is a point when they kind of drag.
Yeah, there's a lot of highs and lows in disparity in quality.
You gotta fill an hour of TV.
Yeah.
With way less commercials.
It's also, yeah, like, we should point out, TNG episodes with the credits averaged about 45 minutes. TOS, on the other hand, go up to 55 minutes.
Yeah, way less commercials back then.
Television was very different back then.
Yeah. It may not sound like a lot, that extra 10 minutes, but, like, if the episode's dragging, that could be pretty dire. But thankfully, that is not the case with Space Seed. I feel like the whole way you get, like you mentioned, that edge of your seat tension, like, when's Khan going to make his move?
Mm-hmm.
And he simply kind of just, like, that scene with him and MacGyver's where it's like, you either are with me or not, you know, like, make up your mind. And finally, like,
that scene's wild, like, very, like, emotional. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. That's like, you could show that, like, emotional abuse 101.
Yeah, like, or like, yeah. Yeah, emotional abuse in cults. Like, looks like this.
Yeah.
Magnetic leaders, mm-hmm. and stuff. And he just grabs her and throws her to the ground. He's like, yeah, they're with me or not.
Yeah, the way he's just, like, constantly, like, negging her to, like, break her down. Yeah. To be like...
And it worked. Oh, the whole thing we didn't even mention where it's like they kind of start their flirtation and then he's like, you'd be so much prettier if you wore your hair down.
Yeah,
it's like, funny. Oh, that you scene's kind of funny too, because he's like, "Oh, your hair is so up. Try it like this." And he literally just like it's like one
he
curl
moves
goes
a curl.
Down.
He's like, "Yeah, now you're hot." Oh,
much better.
Well, she says like, "Well, it's comfortable." He's like, "Yes, but not attractive."
You look too ugly for me now.
She should have been like having it way up and had like glasses on, and this should have like taken the glasses off and then put it fully down. But this,
well,
it's like
we can't
it's
make her look too just, like, ugly. Hair, glasses, really. My God!
He literally just like lets one ringlet down and is like,
from
much
her like
better.
Beautifully constructed updo, which took like probably upwards of an hour to put
well,
up.
And then later throughout the episode, she wears her hair down. Like he sees her again, mm-hmm. he's like, you wear your hair
and
down.
She does look very beautiful because everyone on this show is very beautiful.
Yeah, everyone on the show looks beautiful.
There was a line from Khan that made me laugh. I mean, it's horrible, but yeah. Like, I think it's when she comes back the second time. He's like, please, entertain me. It's just such a, like, oh my God.
She's like, all right.
Okay.
I've been reading up on starships, but they have one luxury not mentioned in the manuals.
I don't understand.
Beautiful woman. My name is Khan. Please sit and entertain me.
I'd like some historical information about your ship, its purpose, and...
And why do you wear your hair in such an uncomplimentary fashion?
It's comfortable.
But it's not attractive.
But I mean, like, it plays his character. He's this dictator from a third world war, a war called the Eugenics War. So it's all about, like, making, you know, basically Nazi supermen, essentially, you know. And, it, like, of course his character.
I don't think we said
like
this,
that.
But, like, the idea of the Eugenics War is that they explain a little bit is so that the scientists breed this race of supermen. And what happened was all they. The world broke into petty dictatorship. So the idea, they don't go too far into detail, but I think what the idea is supposed to be is like, instead of like the countries as they were, you know, IRL, they turn into like different fiefdoms of, and this guy was the strongest of them all and the biggest, which is, yeah. So he's like, he was like almost emperor of the world.
Came close.
And this leads to a moment that's kind of weird to me, where I don't know if it's a plot hole or what, but he just gives his name as Khan. He doesn't give his full name. And then eventually, as they look through their records, they're like, I wonder if it's this guy Khan. Khan, Nudie, and Singh. The guy.
Is it this guy?
Exactly the same.
I think it's this guy.
And there's a moment when Scotty even says, he's like, oh, like Scotty makes it sound like he's heard of Khan before. So it's like, why did it take 25 minutes for them to bring him up on the record tapes?
Khan,
I mean, yeah, it would kind of be like if you like in like 2020, in the year like 2023, unfroze someone named Napoleon.
Yes.
Well, okay,
what's your full name? Just Napoleon.
But you could also just assume that, like, I don't know, maybe they had weird parents who gave him a weirdo name. I don't know.
I mean, Khan's a name.
Khan's a name.
Yeah.
Could have been Khan Super Nusen Phone from King of the Hill.
It could have. It also was like, so every time they referred to, like, the 1990s.
They should have known when they saw his shoulders.
Yeah, they should have remembered from their history books.
Shoulders. They saw that it was, I mean, it seemed like Kirk was putting it together right away. He's like Botany Bay. That was like the
Khan?
Yeah, he's like, is that Khan?
But it's like might be Khan.
They know when it was made, that what was happening during that time, and the fact that it's called Botany Bay, that was like a convict ship or whatever. Like, I love how in the beginning Spock's is like, that seems pretty unlikely, Captain. Like, what are you talking about?
Also,
his name's Khan. It's Botany Bay. Look at him.
Well,
look at the guy.
Also, as Spock would say, you know, you can't jump to conclusions without all the information, without all the data. And, you know, they had to wait for a little more data, such as, will this guy try to mutiny and steal our ship? Oh, yeah, he did. Oh, okay, that's Khan.
Is he going to space seat us?
Is this guy going to space? Ah, fuck, he did it. Damn it.
That's, speaking to that, I love the title of this episode because it doesn't come into play until the last line.
Yeah.
The last line. Yeah, which is great. Like the episode is Khan takes over the ship with the help of ship historian MacGyver's. He removes
his former crew. He revives the rest of his crew in Botany Bay.
He revives his former crew. He gets some help. And he threatens to kill Captain Kirk unless, because Khan needs some of the crew to help him because the ship is complex. Like, I've only read the first 35 volumes of your ship's manual.
Well, and so I think too, like, just the way the ship works, I think you have to have a lot of people running it.
Yeah, it's a big ship and it makes sense. So he's like, I'm going to kill Captain Kirk unless you guys help me. MacGyver's kind of has a moment where it's just like, I don't want, you know, I want to help this Napoleon Bonaparte guy, but I don't want him to kill Captain Kirk. So she frees Captain Kirk.
Makes me feel bad.
Yeah, they end up overpowering Khan, I shouldn't say overpowering. Well, no, they do. There's a moment. So there's a fight scene, a classic Star Trek stage
Kirk
play
and Khan
fight scene in engineering where it cuts to like 30 feet away and it's like two obvious stuntmen throwing each other around. And there's a moment when Khan, you know, it seems like he has the upper hand. He's like, I have five times your strength, Captain. And Kirk is pinned against like a panel in engineering, and he pulls out some sort of rod that he uses as a weapon. I don't know the functional use of this in engineering. It is just like a lead pipe, essentially.
Yeah, it's just one of those engineering pipes.
But he pulls it out of the console, and I'm just like, this just looks like a lead pipe. Like, what's the practical use of this?
Maybe it was just some of the ship's plumbing. Maybe like someone somewhere, their toilet's like backing up
someone's
in their apartment.
Like,
yeah.
Someone
now I have to put in a maintenance request.
Someone who didn't hear the red alert sound in his quarters sleeping.
What? Like, it's my day off.
Oh, the toilet's overflowing. Well, this is great. Oh, great. Now the air is getting sucked out of my room. What the hell is going on?
Of course this would happen to me. And then you go to your shift the next day and you're just like, man, I'm so annoying. Did you hear? And then they're like, yeah, the whole thing with Khan. And you're like, what?
Who?
Whatever.
But he overpowers him, and this is just such a baffling. I mean, I love this ending, but it's also very baffling. Kirk's decision, rather than send him to a reorientation camp, it's like, well, you're a dictator. We'll drop you off on a planet, and you can rule and conquer this planet.
Yeah, you can just
have
the planet.
I mean, they do say it's uninhabited.
Yeah, but it's like,
oh, is it uninhabited?
I think they say that.
But they also are like, and I think they touch on it again in Wrath of Khan of like, is there, you know, soil you can grow things in? Is there like food?
They compare it. They say in this, it's like not too unlike Australia when the.
But also, it's hard to grow a lot of things in Australia too.
Yeah, Australia also was habited.
Yeah.
Yeah. By people. If I remember right, Star Trek 2, they say that, like, yeah, when we were dropped off here, the planet was habitable. Like, we could live here and build a life. But it's only, like, 5 years later mm-hmm. when a neighboring planet explodes, and then it shifts the...
That'll happen,
planet,
you know.
That will happen.
Whatever. But it screws their planet up.
But it's like, if you're trapped on that little, you know, piece of shit planet that they plunked you on with no, you know, means of contact or leaving, then yeah, it kind of is a death sentence.
But they clearly were into it though. They're like they don't say thank you, but like it's,
he nods.
Yeah,
it's an acknowledgement. He's like, thank you, Captain. This is I agree to this.
If I were,
you're not so bad, Captain.
In Wrath of Khan, Kirk should have replayed this episode for Khan and be like, "Hey, remember how you were like down with this idea too?
You were into it." Well, again, he's had many years to get mad about it. So,
well, that's the thing. He's like, "You never checked on our progress after you marooned us here as a sentence for taking over your ship. How could you, Captain?" It's like, no. I guess it does.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Big Boy Khan. I was supposed to check up on you. I thought you were the Uberbench here.
Okay, but maybe you could have come in to be like, "You still have, you know, you still are able to grow things." Oh, you're not? Well, then let's get you some AIDS.
Well, too bad, Khan. You're supposed to like shape the world and be the best ruler. I guess you can't make shit work here.
Are you gonna punish the rest of the Marla and the rest of the crew because
they voluntarily went along with it?
Because he's a magnetic, charismatic cult leader.
But I actually wonder, did Kirk put this in the report? And so they took over the ship. He almost killed me.
Oh, definitely not. We can't go by Kirk's captain's logs.
I just imagine, like, back at the Federation, anytime they're reading Kirk's logs, just someone like shaking their head the whole time.
They assume either he's making shit up, or
he's one step away from Bond, I think.
Well, I mean, it speaks to the magnetism of Khan, where it's like, well, we don't want to just plop him in a reorientation center. Like, I mean, he almost killed all of us, but he's just so damn hot.
Yeah, maybe
he's
that really magnetism cool, is affecting though. Kirk as well. Yeah, that's a good point.
It's just they all have this admiration for him, and it's just so bizarre. And at the end of the episode, you have that great line where Spock's just like, I wonder what crop will come from the seed you just planted, Captain. And, like, you could tell Spock's just like, what the fuck?
Why
is
didn't
going
you
on
kill
right
him?
Now?
Yeah.
It's like there's reorientation centers at every star base. We could have just plopped them in there. You know, they could have been functioning members of society, albeit lobotomized, but still functioning members. Because I'm assuming reorientation centers just lobotomize people.
Yeah.
But anyway, it is still like, again, it's just like, how much can you admire a dictator? It's like,
the answer
on,
is maybe Spock don't.
Spock is the only one who's like, no. Maybe it's because he's so logical. He's not affected by the emotional magnetism as much.
Well, that's what he would claim.
It almost seems like it's really a kick the can thing, you know. Down, you know, because it's just like they are like they say that their brains are superior as well. It's like it stands to reason that like over time, especially since we're evidently never going to check in on this, we're not going to report it to the Federation. We're never going to have anyone check back on this Nazi Superman that we dropped off on this planet. It's conceivable that over time, these like super people could, you know, get off the planet somehow.
Yeah, it seems like you'd want to keep tabs.
Exactly,
on
but
this
apparently sitch. They don't. Because I think we're right. I think we've come to the right conclusion that Kirk didn't put this in his report.
Yeah.
There was actually never a con. Nothing happened.
Actually, yeah, nothing happened.
The Benny report.
No, he's like doing it, and then like weeks later, he's like, did I forget to... Shit, I didn't even mention con. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's like, Stardate, nothing happened today. Bye.
I didn't get my ass beat at all. Not even once. And
well, I guess you'd think he'd have to mention the you know, where ship historian MacGyver's went what happened to MacGyver's? Like, if I'm the Federation, like, hey, you're coming into Starbase with one less crew member.
What's yeah, probably what happened? MacGyver's,
I don't know who that is.
Really, because her next of kin is wondering what happened to her.
You have that room on the ship just filled with portraits of dictators.
Surely someone lived here?
Well, it's only because everyone on the ship admires dictators of old. It's like, oh, okay.
Wait, they do? Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But again, a really tightly paced episode, fun. You get some really great acting with Montalban and the rest of the cast, and I think this was a perfect episode to pull from for a future movie. Like, they couldn't have picked a better TOS episode.
It literally sets up, like, it's almost like begging for the, like, well, let's check up on it. Like, there is a not a cliffhanger exactly, but there is like a I wonder what would happen in a sequel to this episode. I think this was a good, like, first one to watch for us. And I would say, like, if you're out there and you've never seen TOS and you're curious about it, this is a good one to dip your toes into.
Definitely. Especially you have that connective tissue to the movies, which, you know, a lot of people love the movies. Again, that's how I got into
And especially Wrath of Khan. I think, like, if you're interested in Star Trek at all, you've probably seen Wrath of Khan.
Or heard of it. Yeah. And you can see the genesis of the Khan character. And again, I think it's great that you have those two sides of the coin. You have, like, the more simplified revenge oriented Khan in the movie, and now you kind of get this other side where the kind of the scheming Khan, like, let me play my cards just right. You know what I mean? It's a lot of fun to watch. And honestly, I'm glad that the Hilton simulator malfunctioned and flung us back into the TOS era. This is going to be fun.
Actually, we're doing great.
Yeah, we're actually doing great. The replicators are working. You know, we're not starving to death on the shuttle. Like, we're fine.
So far.
And as I say shuttle, the shuttle, like, is in the store.
I'm resting my piping hot mug of coffee on the shuttle panel. No lid. It's fine.
We should say to the listeners, we could leave this simulator whatever we want. We're not actually back in time. We're But anyway, what's next on our voyage through the old frontier?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because we are going to a little planet called Vulcan.
What?
To see, to help Spock with his adult puberty, and we're doing a muck time.
Excuse me, this is Lieutenant Chekhov. I believe it's pronounced Vulcan.
Get the fuck out of here, Chekhov.
No! Nobody likes you. You weren't even in this episode. Get out of here.
You weren't even in this episode, and yet Khan remembers you 40 years later or whatever. 20 years later. He was in the break room the whole time.
Well, when we come back, we will be discussing one of the funnest titled episodes of TOS.
It means absolutely nothing.
Amok Time. I can't remember if I had a sign-off for TNG episodes or not. What would be a TOS sign-off?
Space. No. God damn it. It's a lot less snappy lines than I can think of. Yeah, play us off with some some nice music.
All right, well, I gotta deliver my own space seed. I'll see you
guys. Oh, God.
I had to end the episode crude. I'm sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
I got a lot of studying to do, reading up on ancient dictators, you see.
There we go. Yeah.
Studying.
That'll be all. Captain's log out.
XOXO, Kirk.
XOXO. Winky face emoji.
But if you will excuse me, gentlemen, ladies, I grow fatigued again. With your permission, Captain, I will return to my quarters.